Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Talking Point. After an absolutely crazy Azerbaijan Grand Prix, probably the race of the season for me, and my name's Henry Valentine, and with me is Finley Krivolda from Planet F1. Finley, what did you make of that?
Oh, yeah, I'm still recovering. That was, just exactly what we wanted from Baku. It was after a bit of a slow start to the race. I mean, it's still good, just not the chaos of Baku. We got it all in the end. Yeah, what a race.
Oh, absolutely superb. So if you missed the race, first of all, go and watch it. Like, come back to us later. Yeah. It was just absolutely phenomenal. Sergio Perez took the win, which, you know, none of us would be unhappy about. But it was a race of completely contrasting fortunes for Red Bull and Mercedes. Perez took the win. Massive accident for Max Verstappen a few laps before the end. Lewis Hamilton locked up at the race restart after the subsequent red flag. Checo went on to win, and we had an unlikely podium, which, you know, is all we really asked for from F1. Just that a little bit of craziness from time to time, and it was just brilliant.
It was really feel-good podium, I thought. You know, we'll get onto Vettel and Gasly a bit later on, but it was three drivers that you felt really happy to see up there celebrating, which, I don't think we get too often in F1. I'm not saying I'm unhappy when Hamilton and Verstappen are on the podium, but it is a nice story, I think, when you get three drivers. They've had a lot of, you know, they've all been sacked by various teams in the last 2 years, Perez, Vettel and Gasly. So, yeah, it was a happy ending to a crazy, crazy day.
Absolutely right. Let's start at the front anyway. So, I mean, it's almost gone under the radar that Charles Leclerc started on pole after all that.
I know. I completely forgot, honestly. I'm rewatching the highlights again. I was like, oh, yeah, the Ferrari started at the front. Yeah.
It was absolutely crazy. And then, because he got a massive tow off of Lewis Hamilton in qualifying, which will undoubtedly have gained him a few tenths. But for him to start on pole still for the second race running was great news for him. But Hamilton and Verstappen were able to get the jump on him quite early, and Perez soon followed. But Perez starting from P6 as well, like he really made those moves early, didn't he?
Yeah, I think, talking about Perez, I think the key to him winning the race, apart from Verstappen and Hamilton both having issues, was his start. You know, I mean, he got past Sainz, Gasly, Leclerc, all by, I think, like, you know, under 10 laps in. And that's kind of where his weakness has been this year. He's ended up stuck behind a midfield car and lost touch with the front. So I think that was the key, really, that allowed him to have, you know, have a bit of clean air to stay within touch with the front two. And at that point, you were wondering, Verstappen v Hamilton, are Red Bull going to use Perez as a rear gunner, you know, just to kind of stop Hamilton? But he had too much pace for even that strategy in the end, you know?
Absolutely. And it was really good to see Perez show that sort of ruthless side to his racing again. I mean, he's got a great record at Baku anyway, two podium finishes previously there out of the four races. And yeah, he really sort of showed his mettle. And is this the moment that he's arrived as a Red Bull driver, do you think?
I think it is, yeah. I think he said at the start of the weekend that he finally felt like he kind of understood the car and knew what he was doing. But you obviously take that with a pinch of salt. I think we've heard a lot of drivers say that about new cars and then their performances haven't really changed that much. But with Perez, the race really did look like he had a full understanding of it, you know. I mean, he went toe-to-toe with arguably the greatest driver of all time for the entire race. You know, Hamilton was right behind him for the whole race and he held him off and he didn't put a foot wrong. And I think you've got to have a pretty good grip of your car to do that at a street circuit. To not only stay out of the walls, but to have enough pace to stay ahead of Hamilton as well. Yeah, I think this was a really big turning point for him, actually. You know, it felt a bit like Sainz last time out of Monaco, you know, that P2 felt like a big deal. Just waiting for Ricciardo to find that now, I guess. But yeah, it really did feel like the weekend that Perez, you know, showed just what he can do.
He came top in two practice sessions as well. So it's not like it was a one-off. He was there from the very start. And once Verstappen's tyre failure happened, which we'll come on to shortly, it was didn't really look like too much of a bother for him. He was able to manage it from there.
Yeah, I think what the impressive thing was just how he dealt with this huge pressure. I mean, once Verstappen was out, it was on him, you know? It not only was his teammates' title chances a lot resting on him, but also his team's title chances in the Constructors' Championship. You know, obviously, Verstappen was gone. It was one-on-one Perez Hamilton. And he kept his cool to the obviously. He made a bit of a slower start than Hamilton at the restart, but that worked out just fine for him in the end. If you look at his whole race, he didn't put a foot wrong. He didn't make one mistake. He was unlucky not to be leading after the first stint because he had that slow stop, obviously. If he didn't have that slow stop, he would have come out ahead of Verstappen.
It makes you wonder if he would have been allowed to stay ahead of Verstappen, but that's a point for another day, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, Christian Horner said yes, but I'm not so sure, to be honest.
Yeah, nor am I.
But to be fair, I think Verstappen did a stronger pace, so I think it may have been a logical team order at that point. But Perez's best race, well, I guess since he last won a race.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And even then, he was sort of mopping up everything else that happened around him. So, you know, and that's what he did throughout his time as sort of Force India Racing Point as well. He was always there when things were going wrong.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of his specialty, I think, is, you know, the reason he's got so many podiums is he, in those high-pressure situations where the chance comes up, he doesn't falter. You know, we've seen it a lot of times with Nico Hülkenberg, for example, back in the day, where he had massive chances for a podium. And it felt like as soon as he got a glimpse of that podium, it just completely kind of rattled him. Whereas with Perez, that doesn't seem the case at all. And when he gets the glimpse of a win, he seems to handle it just fine, which is, yeah, that's pretty important, I think, for a driver in the best car on the grid.
Yeah, absolutely. But looking at the other side of the Constructors' Championship now, it was an absolutely horrible weekend for Mercedes. They were they were well out of contention in practice sessions. That both drivers finished outside the top 10 in FP2. They were trying everything to get back to the front of the field. I mean, Lewis Hamilton pulled out like a superb qualifying lap to be able to put himself on the front row, and for him to do that with a car that looked like it was absolutely nowhere, and Valtteri Bottas proving that by being stuck in midfield for the whole race, arguably towards the back, just showed, you know, how much he was able to get out of a car that really wasn't behaving itself.
Yeah, I think this was one of Hamilton's best drives of the season. You know, like you said, the car really wasn't particularly good, and yet he managed to get ahead of both Red Bulls in qualifying. I know he was helped by a red flag, but even so, it was still a, you know, pretty perfect lap, and then stay on the back of one Red Bull throughout the race. And I mean, he wasn't miles away from Verstappen either. It was I think for most of the time.
He led before the pit stops as well, his own slow stop.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think he didn't quite have the pace of Verstappen. You know, obviously, I think even without the issue for the pit stop, Verstappen still would have come out ahead, but it would have, I'm not sure, it would have been tight. But I don't think he quite had the pace of Verstappen, but I mean, his pace was completely even to Perez's. They were, you know, right by each other for the whole race. Hamilton was even pressuring Perez for the whole race. And I think Verstappen was generally 4 seconds ahead, give or take. So, yeah, I think it's it was some real just miracle work from Hamilton, to be honest. I mean, I'd be curious to know who was performing closer to kind of the accurate performance of the car in the pecking order, Hamilton or Bottas. You know, was Hamilton just kind of getting every single bit of potential out of it, and Bottas was just having a fairly standard race, or was Bottas just having an absolute horror show? But yeah, it was another reminder that, you know, just how good Hamilton is. But at the end of the day, it was all for nothing because of one accidental flick of a switch.
Yeah, so again, if you didn't see it, after Verstappen brought out the red flag with his accident, which, you know, there's a wider discussion around Pirelli, which we'll probably have later on in the episode, but that left two laps to get to the finish line, and Hamilton was saying on the grid, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We're trying to, and you know, obviously subconsciously saying that he was trying to look at the championship game rather than that single race. So that. Sort of intimated that he wasn't going to attack at the first corner, but he got a better start than Perez. He was alongside him. And then, yeah, he accidentally flicked a switch that completely changed his brake bias. And then he was just a passenger. He went straight on.
Yeah, the switch thing made a lot of sense. It explained a lot for me because I could not get my head around it at first because, for one, P2 isn't that bad when Verstappen's retired. But he had a much better start than Perez. He could... And he had the inside line, so he could have afforded to break pretty early and still get ahead of Perez into the first corner. So I was like, why the hell would he break that late and lock up? So then when he explained it was the switch, the magic brake switch, that made a lot of sense. But I mean, God, talk about costly errors. That's
I know.
That would have given him a big lead in the title fight, and one that you're not sure Verstappen would be able to close, I don't think, in his first ever title fight. I'm sure he could have, but it would be difficult. It would have been a big advantage for Hamilton, especially with two street circuits done and another one cancelled later on in the season. You know, it would have been, advantage Hamilton for sure. So that is a big, big error on his part.
Well, the thing is that doesn't happen very often at all, does it? But it was a really, really bad time for it to happen. It ended a 54 race streak of him scoring points, which in itself is completely nuts.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah,
that's about 3.5 seasons worth, or three seasons worth of racing.
Yeah, talk about picking your timing. That's, you know, there literally could not have been a worse time to make what seems like a pretty strange mistake.
Mm. That's it. So it was effectively a 0-0 draw coming out of it. And if you go to planetf1.com, our conclusions piece is online. And that's how it was described effectively, that it's a 0-0 draw. So they just move on to the next one. And, you know, ultimately for both drivers, it's not really the end of the world, but both of them had chances to capitalize on it. So that will probably play on both of their minds going into France.
Yeah, I think both of them. Well, I don't think Verstappen will have any regrets because obviously there's nothing he could have done. He drove the perfect race. Yeah, literally, didn't put a foot wrong, didn't make any mistakes, and just it wasn't about managing his tires because, you know, the tire wear looked fine. It was literally just out of nowhere a tire failure. So I think Verstappen will be gutted that he lost out on the win. But of the two, I do wonder, I think Hamilton might be struggling a bit more with it just because it was kind of his own fault for him.
And the chance was there.
Yeah, the chance was there and a mistake lost it for him rather than a tyre failure or a mechanical issue or something. But I mean, it's great for the season as a whole, though. I think that they stay so close to each other. I think what would have been best for the season would be if Verstappen opened up that lead a bit more, because we are going to some Mercedes favoured tracks going forward. But, you know, I think no draw on the whole. I mean, you know what? Sergio Perez isn't that far off now. I think he's 30 points behind Hamilton. So
yeah, 32 behind Hamilton.
32.
Yeah.
I mean, one win for him, one retirement for Hamilton. And there you go. You've got I don't know.
That's a Red Bull headache.
yeah. That's thinking very far ahead, but I don't know. You never know. After this weekend, it's all a lot more interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But looking at the rest of the podium now, a second consecutive Driver of the Day award for Sebastian Vettel. You can absolutely understand why. His first podium for Aston Martin, a brilliant P2 finish, starting from P11 as well, making up 9 places during the race. And that is just a huge moment for him, isn't it?
Yeah, after Monaco, where he was also great. Everybody, the narrative around Vettel was, oh, is the old Vettel back? And it was generally felt like, it's a bit soon to say that. It's one race. Well, one race where he was very good, but every driver can have good races. I think what mattered was that he did it again, and he did. I think he was even better in Baku, to be honest. You know, starting in, you know, with Monaco, he was helped out by a good qualifying session, whereas here he had to do the work from further back. And I mean, God, he was, you know, that first stint he lasted, you know, pushing 20 laps, I think it was 18 odd laps on soft tires, which nobody else was able to go that long on. And his pace was really strong as well. I mean, he wasn't even massively kind of holding up Verstappen when Verstappen had pitted and Vettel was still out. So yeah, I think that first stint did the hard work for him. And then, well, the last stint as well, after the first restart, after his teammates crash, that kind of got him into the mix for the podium, because he just nailed it on, again, fresher tyres. And I mean, yeah, it was such a strong race for him. And now I think it's a lot safer to say that the old Vettel is returning, which is a very exciting thought for the sport, I think, because, I mean, yeah, it was easy to forget last year and in 2019 even, but on his day, he is still so good.
That's it. You're done with four world championships without having something behind you. But it was really good to see him do that. Because Aston Martin, that car didn't, like, they were just sort of wedged in midfield, like on the edge of the points as well throughout the weekend. And like, for him to be able to pull off that race, I mean, don't get me wrong, Lance Stroll's accident was, he was an absolute passenger. There was nothing he could do about it. But Vettel looked like he sort of had the march on him for most of the weekend, really.
Yeah, he did, and that's two weekends in a row now, and it's just amazing how quickly things can change in F1, isn't it? I think before Monaco, we had a lot of people, you know, I remember Ralf Schumacher saying that I think he said Vettel had 3 races to sort out this intra-team battle with Stroll, and if he was still losing, then that was it, you know, career over. And I mean, well, he's done it in 2, you know, Monaco and Baku, he's not only been better than his teammate, but I think he's probably been the best midfield driver as well. You know, obviously Gasly had a great race. Norris was pretty good in Monaco, not bad in Baku. But I mean, yeah, Vettel, that's 2 results now that have completely changed the narrative surrounding him, I think. I mean, now he's well ahead of his teammate in the standings. And you're kind of looking at him as the lead man at Aston Martin now, which would have been pretty unthinkable before Monaco, I think.
Absolutely. Well, in those 2 races, he jumped above Daniel Ricciardo in his McLaren in the World Championship standings as well. So it's amazing how quickly his fortunes can turn around. But mentioning Gasly there as well, a third Formula One podium for him. Brilliant race as well. And Charles Leclerc was challenging him right to the line, but he got his elbows out, didn't he? He made sure he kept that place.
Yeah, that was great, that fight. That was, again, it was Leclerc got him at the start. Well, the restart, rather. He got ahead of him. And then on the same straight, Gasly got back ahead of Leclerc, dived down the inside. And then they go into the second DRS zone. And again, Leclerc gets his nose ahead. But Gasly, again, sticks it on the inside, pushes his way through back to P3. I mean, that was, yeah, just some of the best racing of the day, I think. And I think at the end, it ended with the right outcome. I think Gasly really deserved that podium, because I think he was maybe the only driver on the grid that had an objectively good Saturday and Sunday. You know, If you think your way through the grid, I mean, obviously Leclerc had an incredible Saturday, but his Sunday wasn't great. Vettel, Perez the other way around, even Verstappen would have been happy. I think Gasly was, because, you know, in qualifying, he was P4, something ridiculous, like 0.03 of a second off Verstappen. And then, yeah, he was just as good in the race. I mean, he might feel a bit disappointed to end up behind Vettel, but all things considered, P3 in that car, holding off a Ferrari, it's, another really good race for him. And I find myself saying that a lot this season. I mean, I don't know. Do you think he's going a bit under the radar this year? I feel like he's not being spoken about that much, but he's very consistent, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's starting to get applauded from people. You know, but the stupid thing is, like, it's perfectly plausible that he might not have a seat come next season. Like, even after all this, which, you know, at the moment, he's making himself impossible to ignore. So whether AlphaTauri give him another year, if Perez drops off at Red Bull, if he gets given a second chance there, or if Alpine decides to take him on, even though it's been confirmed that they have open talks with Esteban Ocon for a deal for next season. But other than that, it looks like there are sort of multi-year deals in place sort of throughout the grid. He might even struggle to get a seat next season, which at the moment seems absolutely unthinkable.
Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, I think he'll stay at AlphaTauri. I don't think he'll want to, but I don't think there'll be anywhere else for him. But, I mean, it is just crazy. I mean, I'd say he's arguably the most desirable driver on the grid in terms of drivers that are realistically available, you know? I mean, I suppose Mercedes. Russell is as well, but I mean, yeah, why wouldn't Mercedes take a look at him, you know? I mean, he's just been so good, and he's one of the few young drivers that has proved himself to be able to lead a team as well. Yeah, it looks like the Alpine move isn't going to happen, which a lot of us expected to happen, because they're opening talks with Ocon, and obviously Alonso's staying next year. I don't know, you look at performances like this from Gasly there, and you just wish that he could end up in that Mercedes or Red Bull next year, don't you?
You do, but yeah, is it too early for silly season talk? Who knows? But it's that's going to be something to keep an eye on over the next few weeks. And just looking down the rest of the field in Baku, I mean,
yeah, my mind goes to Fernando Alonso. Yeah, he's one of those drivers that just loves it there as much as us, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Where it was his first Q3 appearance in Baku over the weekend, which in itself was a surprise. It almost went a little bit unnoticed yesterday, but in that two lap sprint after the red flag late on, like he managed to jump up four places to P6 when his Alpine didn't really look capable of that this weekend.
No, that's crazy. I remember before the red flag, I was thinking, oh, how the hell's Alonso dropped out of the points? You know, he had a decent quality. He started in P9 and he's good here. Really expecting him to be top 10. But I think for a lot of races, he ended up in P11, which was, a real disappointment for him. But then you see at the red flag, he's got fresh softs to put on and you think, oh, you know, he's always been quick off the line. So I wondered if maybe he could get one car, maybe push into. I think I can't remember if he was P11 or not, or if Verstappen had bumped him up, but
he's 10 at the restart, I think.
Yeah. So I thought, you know, maybe he'll end up P9, get a couple of points or something. But I mean, you know, obviously one of those positions was Hamilton going for a jolly, but you know, he passed three cars in the space of two laps, and I'd say probably. I can't remember who those drivers were, but I'd wager that they were in equal, if not better, cars. If you,
I believe it was Ricardo, Tsunoda. I'm trying to think of the third one now.
Sainz, I guess.
I think it would have been. Yeah. Sainz finished P8.
And I mean, that's three drivers in better cars, isn't it? So yeah, that was. I do. I hope we're getting on board of that restart for Alonso. I've seen his getaway off the line, but I'd like to see the full on board of the final two laps, because that is just vintage Alonso, isn't it? I think some of his best moments come from those kind of charges off the line, off a standing start. So, again, it's not quite, you know, it feels Alonso in Baku feels a bit like Vettel in Monaco, doesn't it? You know, we get that glimpse of the old Alonso, all starting to think, oh, is he back? But again, I think we need to see it again in France, and then we can start to get excited again, I think. But yeah, it's a good sign for sure, and it's a relief to see that he still got it. Drivers and new cars this year. And if you forget the rookies, they're all going pretty well. I think obviously Perez got a win, Vettel's got two great races, Sainz was P2 in Monaco, and Alonso was great in Baku. You know, Ricardo, of the group that are in new cars this year, is the one that's, this is another track that traditionally Daniel Ricardo is like a master of. And he was better than he was at Monaco, to be fair. But again, Norris had the better of him, which, you wouldn't expect. And yeah, it's really good for Norris, and it's really not good for Ricardo, although he'll feel better than he did after Monaco, at least.
That's it. He said he went back to the factory, made quite significant changes to himself and the car, and he said he felt better a weekend. But I mean, on the track, it's not quite showing up for him yet. But it's five, six races now. I think we still give him time, don't we? There's not that sort of sinking feeling yet. There's no reason to really worry just yet.
No, definitely not. I just think. I don't think there's any question that he's lost his touch or anything. I think he's as good as ever. He's just struggling with the car. But you do start to wonder, is that car just really not suited for him at all? Yeah, he obviously likes cars with a lot of downforce that he can brake really late on. And this McLaren is a bit different to that. It is more towards the Mercedes mold, you know, where it relies more on straight line speed. So, yeah, I think it is a bit of a worry in that department whether this car is going to allow him to get the best out of it. But I don't know. I think he's good enough to adapt to it by the end of the first half of the season, I'll say, I think.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that as well. It was a better weekend for Yuki Tsunoda too. P7 finish for him. Got into Q3 for the first time. I mean, he got instructed to move to Italy, which I don't know if you've ever been told to move to another country before, but I can't imagine that being an easy conversation.
That must have been the best phone call he ever got, though. He lives in Milton Keynes and he gets a phone call, yeah, we're going to move you to Italy. I mean,
true.
It's not bad, is it? No wonder he was better this weekend. He was probably over the moon.
Hey, Milton Keynes is a lovely place. work for the Milton Keynes Tourism Board, mate. But we'll, So he's been instructed to move to Italy to be closer to his team so he can spend more time in the factory at Faenza for AlphaTauri, which, has hopefully paid some immediate dividends for him. But I don't think they'll have liked his team radio message in the race too much, would they?
No, I think that's been the case in quite a few races this year, which... Oh, I love it. He said before, around Monaco time, that he was really going to try hard to kick out these aggressive radio messages because he thinks it's bad for team morale. That didn't last very long.
Yeah, didn't work.
No, it's just he can justify it a bit more when he's driving fairly well. The gap to Gasly was still too big, really, for his liking. But it was a step in the right direction at the very least, wasn't it? He'll be kicking himself at his restart. I think he lost two places at the restart, which, yeah, so things could have been even better, really, because that's turning into a pretty tight fight for P5 in the constructors now between Aston, AlphaTauri and Alpine. I don't think there's much between any of them. I think Alpine are kind of dropped behind a bit at this point. But, every position counts, so they really do need Tsunoda to keep doing what he was doing in Baku, you know. We're not expecting him to beat Gasly in his first year, I think, but just to be getting points at the least.
Well, I think Helmut Marko was expecting him to beat Gasly try and, effectively, not necessarily force Gasly out of the team, but just show that the driver program has still got a lot of young talent coming through.
Yeah. I mean, Helmut Marko needs to really wants to show that his young driver program is good by getting Tsunoda in. But does he just want to like ignore the fact that Gasly's from his young driver program? You know, it seems like Red Bull are just not interested in him at all. And I mean, it's just crazy. He's one of the best drivers on the grid. I mean, he's got three podiums now in F1, you know, which considering none of them came at Red Bull either. They've all come at AlphaTauri. And one of them was a win. I mean, yeah, it's pretty good going. But yeah, that AlphaTauri lineup it's an exciting lineup for sure. And you think if Tsunoda can, start to continue on this trajectory, then that can be a really strong lineup, which you can actually say about any team in the midfield, really. That's kind of what the issue is for the likes of George Russell, isn't it? There really is no room in the midfield anymore.
Yeah, you mentioned the midfield battle there. Each member of the top six was in a different car as well, which is, just shows how close everything is in the midfield. I mean, barring, even forgetting both accidents there, it's good to see it all so bunched up. And that's probably going to be ruined next year with the new regulations, isn't it? But we'll enjoy it for now.
Yeah. I think what would be great was if Ferrari and McLaren can end up a bit closer to Aston, Alfa and Alpine, because then we could have a real crazy fight for the best of the rest positions on race day. But yeah, I mean, if you ask me now what the pecking order is, I'd struggle to tell you. It does seem to be changing so much at every track, which hasn't really been the case for the last few years. I mean, it was a bit last year with Racing Point versus McLaren. But generally, we've had a pretty kind of clear-cut pecking order in terms of teams in the hybrid era. But yeah, this year, that has not been the case at all. It's just annoying. It's in the last year regulations before they get changed again.
Yeah, same situation in 2013, wasn't it, before the turbo hybrid came in? It was, yeah, exactly the same. But,
yeah,
you know, we'll enjoy it while it lasts. I feel like we need to give a shout-out to the Williams pit crew, by the way, because George Russell had to go out of FP3 with some sort of water leak issue, and that meant that the Williams team had to change the entire power unit, which normally takes them about 4 hours, in 2 hours. And I mean, the red flag in qualifying did help them, but they managed to get his car out, and it was a pretty mammoth effort from Russell to be able to still out qualify the Latifi and get himself through to Q2 again.
I mean, pit crews never fail to amaze me. Whenever we get this before qualifying or before a race, and it's like, oh, you've got 10 minutes to fix an entire car, one of the most high-tech vehicles in the world, and you think, no, there's no way they're going to do that. And they do. They always seem to, which is, you know, it really does just always blow my mind, really. At the end of the day, it was all for nothing in the end, because they're now below Haas in the Constructors' Championship, which is just a disaster, isn't it? I mean, how on earth has that happened? You had Williams saying that they could fight the midfield this year. Haas were like, yeah, we're not even going to bother with our car this year, you know. We're not even going to develop it. And now they're above Williams in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, you know, that was largely because Russell couldn't make the restart with his gearbox issue. And then Latifi had a penalty for a really sloppy error from Williams' pit crew, telling them to stay out under the red flag. But that battle for P10, I didn't think it was going to be a battle this year. I thought Haas were going to be lodged at the bottom all year long. But who would have thought?
Well, it wasn't all plain sailing for Haas, though, because, it all kicked off between the two of them, didn't it?
Yeah, that was just crazy. I think I don't know if anyone's... If you're listening and haven't watched it, go and find it somewhere. It was final lap. Mick had the run and on Mazepin, was going to overtake him on the final pit straight. And just so late, you know, when Mick was so close to the back of Mazepin just pulls over to the right, the side that Mick's passing on, towards the wall. And I mean, yeah, understandably, Schumacher was pretty unhappy. He was a bit sweary on the radio, a bit angry. And you can't blame him, really. I mean, you just wonder what the hell was Mazepin thinking. It's just becoming a bit too regular now that every weekend he seems to do something to rub a driver up the wrong way.
Well, he'll make his way through everyone eventually, I'm sure. But mixed radio message after the sweary part, saying, seriously, does he want to kill us? But Mazepin, sort of after the race, he said that he'd run out of battery, so I was a bit of a sitting passenger, and that he was a little bit upset about losing my position to my teammate. I mean, everyone's a little bit upset about losing their position to their teammate, but, you know, you don't have to shove them up into the wall.
No, funny enough, it reminded me a lot of the other Schumacher, Mick's dad. It was...
Hungary 2010.
Yeah, but against Barrichello. I think the team radio is very similar. I think Barrichello said, then is he trying to kill us? So, you know, it's kind of come full circle. We just got the Schumacher role has been reversed.
it's not a brilliant thing to come full circle to, but you know, here we are.
In all seriousness, Mazepin does. He just, because his driving in terms of his actual pace, it is getting better. You know, he is getting closer to Schumacher. There wasn't much between them in qualifying. He beat him in Monaco. So in terms of that, he's making progress, but he kind of undoes that with crazy actions like this, which, yeah, for his own sake, he needs to cut out.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to tyre chat, Pirelli had a bit of a dodgy weekend, didn't they? So they brought tyres that were a step softer than they did last time in Baku. And it just, you know, those two tyre failures on the rear left of Lance Stroll and Max Verstappen led to crashes at 190, 200 miles an hour. And that's, you know, that doesn't really feel acceptable, does it? Because they said that the hard tyre could do 40 laps in the race. Stroll did 31 and was in the wall. I mean, they came out after the race, we should say, and blamed the failures on debris. But for worn tyres to do exactly the same thing to two different drivers at different points of the race, I mean, do you smell a rat there?
Yeah, for sure I do. Yeah, I think, I mean, when Stroll cracked, when it happened to Stroll, where was the debris on track? You know, that's what I'm wondering, because I'm sure little parts come off and that and stuff. It was a windy day, so some stuff maybe blew onto the track. But I mean, there hadn't been any incidents. And to the naked eye on camera, it was a perfectly clear track. You know, there was no debris whatsoever. And it seems, I don't know, it doesn't add up to me. I think maybe Verstappen, there's a bit of Aston Martin lying around on the straight that he accidentally clipped. But yeah, I'm not sure. I think you obviously don't want to be accusing Pirelli of BSing or anything, but
no, not at all.
No. But I'm just not 100% sure that I can fully buy that both of them were debris incidents when they were so similar. I mean, the tyres had done pretty similar amounts of laps, and it was a pretty identical failure, you know, similar part of the track. So yeah, I don't know. It's a big coincidence if it was both debris, especially considering there wasn't much debris on track at that point. But I don't know. Only time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, and one thing that we did manage to hear on the FIA team radio feed, and it was good thinking from Red Bull Sporting Director Jonathan Wheatley there, just saying that that the race should have been red flagged after Verstappen did so, if not to get the debris off the track, but so the drivers could change tyres towards the end as well in case anything else was going to happen.
Yeah, it was really good to hear from Red Bull, actually, because that did not benefit them at all, you know. At that point, Perez was leading Hamilton, and he would have won, you know. He 100% would have, and having a red flag obviously gives Hamilton a massive chance of getting ahead again with the standing start. So yeah, it didn't benefit Red Bull in any way, really. So it was good to hear them kind of prioritize safety. And I think it kind of gave Michael Massey the excuse he wanted as well, because he said after race that he wanted to red flag it so that the race didn't end under the safety car and we got a kind of better spectacle of a finish. And I think that team radio from Red Bull did maybe give him more justification to do that, which kind of played into his hands. But it was good from Red Bull. It is, I mean, it is scary when you think about it, isn't it? You know, it's these drivers going at over 200 miles an hour and with zero warning or anything, their tire just blows. It's dangerous. And well, in a weird way, you hope it was debris, don't you?
Yeah, you do. But ultimately, the main thing is that both Lance Stroll and Max Verstappen were okay afterwards, because if something had happened in a different part of that straight, you know, with the pit entry as well being cut off, you know, you're just glad it wasn't any worse.
Yeah, that's the worry. It's that pit entry. It's if you know, because Verstappen was on the right side of the track at the time, but if he was over to the left and that happened, then you know that the pit wall was right there, kind of head on. You know, his collision with the wall wasn't that bad because the tire had already punctured and he kind of span a bit and lost a bit of speed before he hit the wall. and he hit it kind of to the side. So, yeah, it wasn't that bad. But, yeah, it's a worry, and you just I'm sure we'll get some answers in the coming days. But, yeah, let's just hope it was debris and not some random failures that, you know, just came out of nowhere. But I do think for next year, Pirelli will be reconsidering their decision to go to go down to a softer set of tires for sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, like mistakes were made, and you'd hope that they learn from them, but ultimately that probably needed to happen before the race started, to be honest. But looking ahead then, next will be the start of the first triple header of the season, heading to Paul Ricard in France. As you've already said earlier in the episode, Finn, there's a strong chance that it could be another Mercedes stronghold, but it'll be interesting to see how the next round of this battle between Hamilton and Verstappen will play out.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we've had a great season, you know, it's a season so good that it made Barcelona look decent. So the big question now is, can it make Paul Ricard look decent? Because, I mean, you know, yeah, you've got a serious season on your hands if you get a good French Grand Prix. So, yeah, it's, I don't know, it's the only way's up. I'm keeping my expectations, moderate, you know, so it's, yeah, I mean, I'm open, but yeah, I think it is going to be a Mercedes stronghold. I think Hamilton's got to be the favorite. Bottas, I'm not so sure after the performance, I think both of them are going to, I think, you know, Mercedes, Hamilton and Bottas, they're all going to really, really want to get that win, maybe to get a 1-2 to kind of assert their dominance. Because, I mean, that's a hefty old lead Red Bull have in the Constructors' Championship now.
It really is. But either way, we'll have plenty more reaction to Azerbaijan and a lot of preview content on planetf1.com for the French Grand Prix in a couple of weeks' time. And, you know, you can follow us at any time on social media. We are at planet_F1 on Twitter, planetf1.com on Instagram, and just planetf1 on Facebook. And that's all we have time for today. Finley, thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, we will speak to you after, hopefully, the best French Grand Prix we've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of since it returned to the calendar, I don't think that'd be too difficult. So, yeah, optimistic in that department. Best French Grand Prix that we've ever seen on the way, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we will speak to you then. Thanks very much for joining us.
That's not just any sound. It's lunchtime, and that's the irresistible sound of Philadelphia cream cheese being spread across your sandwich. And now you're wondering if it tastes as good as it sounds? Remember, you came here for this radio show. Irresistibly Philadelphia.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.